Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. In D.C., it is legal to have small amounts of marijuana for recreational use, but you still can't buy it for that purpose legally. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser wants to see recreational marijuana sold and taxed in 18 months. And while that remains to be seen, what we are seeing is a growing medical marijuana business in the district. With the stigma going away, how can African Americans capitalize on this business? Well, we're talking about that tonight. My guests are Linda Mercado Green. She is co-founder and chair of the board of the D.C. Medical Cannabis Trade Association. She also owns Anacostia Organics, a medical marijuana business. And Carlos Corbello, strategic advisor with the Cannabis Trade Federation. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Linda and Carlos, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
It's such a pleasure to be here. I haven't been in this studio in many, many years,
well,
so
I'm
it's
glad
great
that
to
you're
be
here.
Back home.
Carlos, can you hear me?
Thank you so much. I can hear you. It's great to be with you, and it is especially a lot of fun for me to be with Linda, who I want to be like when I grow up.
Well, first things first. I'm going to dispense with all of the marijuana jokes as we and get right to the point, Linda. How did you get into this medical marijuana business? What was the first thing that you decided to do?
You know, everyone asked me that because my background is public relations and government relations, and even though I've done other things under that public relations umbrella, I had gotten to the point where, you know, it was monotonous after so many years, and I had started thinking about what would the next chapter in my life be. But just on a fluke, having dinner with some of my girlfriends one night, somebody mentioned that D.C. had legalized marijuana. And we looked at each other, started laughing and reminiscing, and said we should go in that business.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do anything immediately. The next month when we got together for dinner, it came up again, and we said we should do this. So Sherry Blunt, who's a lawyer, and Yolanda Carraway, and we got up the next day and formed a company and started looking into the business and traveling the country and talking to the operators and the legislators and, you know, just pulling all the research we could. And we realized that this was something that we were going to pursue.
How did you, outside of forming the company,
mm-hmm.
when did you bring in your first leaves, so to speak?
That was a six-year process.
Yeah, okay.
That was a six-year process because we actually took our time to really understand the business. And then we started looking at the legislation and the regulations in Washington, D.C. Obviously, that's where we wanted a license, and found out that we actually wanted a cultivation license, but we found out all 10 of those had been awarded in 2011, 2012. And so then we decided, well, what are we going to do? We must go for a dispensary license, but found out that the city had awarded 5 out of 7 of those, but there were none east of the river. So I put on my Mary and Barry hat and said, "Uh-oh, I know how to get this process reopened." But it took about 6 years. Six years for us to open our doors. We just opened our doors, Anacostia Organics in historic Anacostia on February 4th of mm-hmm. this year.
What kind of investment, monetary investment, was required to do this? Because I know that you also, did you get a grant from the city? Did you get any assistance from the city at all?
No. City doesn't have that in place. It's all private equity money.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about a process like that, it's very expensive to write the app, have the application. You have to have your, in D.C., you have to have your location, which means I had to have a lease. I had at least 3 years before the license was actually granted. You have to have all your architectural plans, your security plans, your down to the serial numbers of the equipment that you have. It's a very expensive and laborious and long process. So before we even were awarded the license, we were in for about $1 million.
That's amazing. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the medical marijuana business and how African Americans can capitalize on it here in the district as well as other places. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Carlos, what is the Cannabis Trade Federation?
So the Cannabis Trade Federation is the premier organization for really anyone in the country who wants to end the federal-state conflict. This struggle that Linda just shared with you is the struggle of many small minority business owners throughout the country who are trying to thrive in this industry. And quite frankly, it's also the story of the average American who has suffered in some way as a result of the outdated, unfair, oppressive federal laws that govern cannabis as a substance in our country. So CTF was formed by industry leaders for all Americans who believe in this cause to make sure that the federal government respects states and the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico and other jurisdictions where voters have overwhelmingly supported either medical marijuana legalization and in some states adult use legalization. This is by far the organization that is most active when it comes to Capitol Hill, and it's the one that has the most credibility. So I know Linda and I are both very fortunate to be a part of the organization's leadership.
Carlos, you're attempting to bring more diversity into this business enterprise. How are you trying to do that?
Well, look, sadly, a lot of the victims of our country's outdated and unfair cannabis laws are African American, Hispanic American, a lot of people who really didn't have the resources to put up a good defense and who, in many cases, have suffered with unfair jail sentences. Connected to their use or possession of this substance over the years. So as we work to change our laws, to make our laws fair, we also want to make sure that this industry exists for the benefit of every American, but especially of those who have faced the wrath of terrible federal cannabis policy over the years. So we want to encourage the industry to be inclusive, not just to be diverse. That one thing is putting up some colorful faces. The other is to actually allow members of minority groups, women, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and others the opportunity to participate in the industry, to hold executive positions, to be shareholders. That's our goal, to make sure that this industry is both diverse and inclusive, and that this industry honors and makes an effort to right the wrongs that we've seen over so many years.
Linda, you were nodding your head. You wanted to share what you were thinking.
Well, I totally agree with everything Carlos was saying. That's why I was nodding. Carlos, you got an amen corner over here. it's been, and you know, that's one of the things that really drove me to be persistent and getting into this business, because as I went to the trade shows and everywhere that I went across the country and attended seminars and all that, I didn't see people like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just people that, and not just the fact that there was no one of color, but women weren't represented in this industry as
Why
well.
Why do you think that is?
Which one?
Why do you think there were no people of color, women of color, when you would attend some of the trade shows and some of the other events around the country? Because I think that's a really important issue, just like prohibition at the end of prohibition, mm-hmm. when African Americans lost out on the ability to produce and to distribute alcohol.
Yes.
And now this is the same thing. And this is an opportunity as the stigma begins to leave and mm-hmm. to move, as states begin to address laws, as the federal government begins to at least ponder the changes that are happening, the Linda Greens of the world need to kind of get out there and make their faces known. But like you said, you didn't see anyone.
Yeah, well, you have to remember that was, I started 6 years ago and the industry is very young.
Right.
8 years, Carlos? 7, 8 years? Old. And so I was out there at the very beginning of it. Now when you go to MJ Biz conference in Las Vegas at their annual conference, you'll see more faces of color and more women. But we didn't know about it. And if I didn't have mentors in the business that I met, like John Lord and Neil Levine at LiveWell, and other people that I met that did that really just mentored me, I wouldn't have known about those industry events.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not that inexpensive to attend. I know that now there are some organizations that actually have like scholarships to make sure that women and minorities can attend. But that's, we just didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the business of marijuana and how it is quickly changing the impressions and the business opportunities for African Americans. If you have a comment, if you have a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Cecilia calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you. And thank you for sharing all the information with us, because I believe that culturally, I'm a mix from Hispanic and Black, and I believe that minorities need to really try to put their footprint out there now. This is an opportunity to start a business and to really show our faces and network and actually grow in this business. I think we will benefit from it. My question is, I was looking to partner maybe with some investors, maybe as a group, because, I mean, $1 million is a lot of money, of course, but if you're pulling your resources together and partnering with someone who's actually starting the business but doesn't have all the revenue and would like to have some partners to invest, I would love to do that, but I just don't know, where to start.
Okay, so I would tell you that now there are numerous funds that specialize in investing in the marijuana business. The website's the best source to find out where they are, because they're numerous.
Which website?
I would just Google cannabis investors.
Okay.
They're investment firms all over. Maybe Carlos, you have some to add to that, but I think that's the best way searching it.
Yeah, Linda and Cecilia, thank you for your call. That's my wife's name. When I heard the name, I was worried she was going to tell me to go home. Listen, this is so important, and because of of people like Cecilia who have these questions, that's why the Cannabis Trade Federation has formed this Diversity, Equality, and Inclusion Committee. Because one of the things we want to do, and we just launched this a couple days ago, so we have a lot of work to do, but one of the things we want to do is be a resource where entrepreneurial people like Cecilia can go online and get this information and be connected with industry leaders and, you know, make the case for whatever she brings to the table. That's exactly what CTF wants to be, and that's why I was saying at the beginning, this is an organization that was founded by industry leaders, but it's not just for industry leaders. It's for every American who wants to have a voice, who wants to make an impact in this industry, who has something to say, a story to share, or something to contribute. So, you know, in the coming weeks, look for us to continue building out this committee and providing resources to so many people like Cecilia throughout this country.
Cecilia, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the business of marijuana and how African Americans can participate. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. 202-319-7810. Lisa, quickly, what's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, please.
Hi, my name is Lisa Scott. I am a long-term D.C. resident. And last year, I was anticipating that an adult-use retail market would open up here in D.C. And, of course, we all know the mayor just announced that they're moving forward as soon as the next administration comes in.
So, Lisa, I've got about 30 seconds before I need to take a break. So what's your question?
I'm sorry. I didn't really have a question. I wanted to say that the mayor's bill is not really inclusive right now. It's very restrictive. And we want, as a community, the cannabis community, we want access for everyone to get into the business, not just six or seven outlets. We have bars, liquor stores, restaurants in the hundreds here in the District of Columbia, and we need more than five or six outlets here in the District of Columbia. And right now, it's not going to happen unless she does something for the community, for the constituents, for the people who put her in office.
That's an interesting point. Lisa, I've got to take a break, but hold on so that you can hear the response of my guests on the other side. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. We're talking about the business of marijuana and African Americans' participation in it. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the business of medical marijuana in the district and how African Americans can capitalize on it. My guests are Linda Mercado Green. She is co-founder and chair of the board of the DC Medical Cannabis Trade Association. She also owns Anacostia Organics. Also Carlos Corbello, strategic advisor with the Cannabis Trade Federation. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Linda, we had Lisa saying that the mayor's bill to legalize recreational marijuana within 18 months is not inclusive. Your thoughts about that?
Well, the mayor's proposed legislation has to go through several steps. And so this is her proposed legislation. It still has to go through council. Council has to have all the hearing processes and the
like any other bill.
But before it could do anything, that rider that Representative Andy Harris attached in Congress to keep us from exercising the will of the people of the District of Columbia by having recreational marijuana has to be lifted. Mm-hmm. And so he's no longer on House Oversight Committee, or if he is, the Democrats are now in control. So we're expecting that and praying that that is lifted in October. So by law, the Office of the Attorney General says we can't even have a hearing on this until that rider is lifted. But it's going to take a process. All liquor stores are licensed. Everybody's got to have licenses for quality control, for public health issues, and for, you know, the regulation. And so she is going to open it up, but you just can't, it can't be like Amsterdam or, you know,
small
other
bites.
Places, small bites.
Yeah.
So she is going to provide opportunities for Washingtonians and minorities to get in the business.
Do you agree with that, Carlos? Is this a small bites, one step at a time kind of situation for the mayor?
Yeah, look, we, we're for, a regulated industry. This is a substance that should be regulated. This is a substance that we need to keep away from children and young people whose brains are developing. So, you know, that's why we are aiming to change this in a gradual way. More importantly, you know, the way our government works or doesn't work these days, we can't get too ambitious. Mm-hmm. If we get too ambitious, we'll get nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
So our vision is to improve these policies a little bit every year. And
okay.
The big first step would be for the federal government to respect the District of Columbia and so many other states throughout the country who have passed laws in this space.
Lisa, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lois calling from Silver Spring. What's on your mind? Lois, are you there? Go right ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me? Great.
Yes, go right ahead, please.
I'd like to thank the panel for having this conversation. I just came into the station. I'm trying to understand what $1 million investment does. What does it procure?
That is an excellent question. What does $1 million buy over the course of 6 years?
Well, I can tell you that anybody in the cannabis industry knows that patience is a virtue. And this is, it's an investment. It's not, you know, there are no guaranteed awards or, you know, there's nothing guaranteed in this industry. And, you know, for one of the things is we're still federal. We're operating illegally.
As it relates to federal laws.
Yeah, so it's not an industry. It's a misnomer that if you're growing, manufacturing, processing, or dispensing, that you're making a lot of money, and that's not true. I mean, we're just not. The 280E tax law, it takes effect because we're Schedule I drug.
Okay.
So that means that if you touch the plant, anywhere from 70 to 85% of every dollar based on your revenue goes to IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's
is an important point. And by the way, this is how I got involved in the issue. I served on the Ways and Means Committee in Congress. That's the committee that deals with tax policy. And someone came up to me one day and said, you know, if you own a cannabis company and you're licensed and operating legally in a state, you can't deduct any business expenses. So you buy furniture for your office, you know, you have a rent payment, you hire a consultant. You can't deduct any of that if you are in the cannabis industry. So you when early on we were talking about how why there's so few African Americans and other minorities in this industry, it's because you can't get a loan at a bank in this industry. You pay a tax rate that is confiscatory. It's so high that it's the equivalent of stealing. So imagine how difficult it is for someone to get a start. You really, a lot of these individuals who have the big cannabis business in the country, they came out of pocket. They put down their own money, and that's one of the big reasons why people of color are underrepresented, because many of us don't have access to that kind of capital. And if the banks aren't going to lend us money because they can't, due to the federal laws, then that makes it even tougher.
So help me out with something here, Carlos, because I remember several years ago, after recreational marijuana was made legal in Colorado, and there was a story on 60 Minutes about an extremely successful company, but they were having issues with what to do with all of the cash, for example, from this state legal enterprise, but considered federally illegal. So, what is the conundrum with that? Can you not deposit cash from a legal marijuana business in a FDIC regulated bank? How does that work?
Pretty much. I mean, a lot of the cannabis companies use state chartered banks. Actually, I'm pretty sure they all do, because if you use nationally chartered banks, the big banks like Bank of America and others, then the federal laws don't allow them to bank this money, because it's considered illicit money. It's considered money from the equivalent of illegal drug trading. So that's right for many years, and now they've found some loopholes in the laws, and very few banks in each state will actually take the risk of participating in this industry, because they have to hire a bunch of attorneys and regulators and make sure that they don't get in trouble with the authorities. But for many years, people had to operate only in cash. And you can imagine how dangerous that is, right? Having to store hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, when it came time to pay your taxes, you actually had to go and take suitcases of cash. And I think in this still happens in a lot of cases. People have to show up with cash, and it's just the more anyone learns about these laws, the more insulting the whole thing is. And again, our goal is to get the STATES Act passed, and that will solve so many problems from one day to the next.
Real quick, because I know you've got to go in a few minutes, where are we on federal legislation about this?
So we have bipartisan bill, the STATES Act. It was filed by Cory Gardner, a Republican from Colorado, and Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts. Cory Gardner is a very conservative guy. Elizabeth Warren is a very liberal woman, yet they have come together because they understand how important this is. And that bill is gaining momentum. It's the only bill in the Congress that has true, strong bipartisan support. And again, the way our politics are playing out these days, where it's very difficult to get anything done, we know that this is our best shot, this STATES Act, to deliver a solution for this industry and for all the Americans who depend on it, either because they're employed by a cannabis company or they're patients and they need access to the substance. This is our best shot. And every day we get more Republicans and Democrats to sign on. And look, Congress is an unpredictable place. You never know, but we're certainly growing in momentum. And every day, especially as younger people get to the Congress, this issue is leaning in the right direction, and I feel good about our chance.
Carlos Corbello, strategic advisor with the Cannabis Trade Federation. Thank you so much. I appreciate your input. We're going to let you go. We're going to continue with Linda Green and also with our phone calls. Let's go to Scott calling from D.C. Scott, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was calling because I did read from all 69 pages of the mayor's proposed bill, and there are
literally 100 or more ganjapreneurs here in the District of Columbia that have been waiting for the last 4 years to get into the adult retail business. Now, I understand because of all the federal stuff that has to happen first. We all understand that. But then when it does happen, and the door should open for us, the mayor has this big program called A Fair Shot that is supposed to help low-income, minorities, women, and everything get into businesses, housing, and all these other things. The cannabis business is one other issue that should be given a fair shot to all the ganjapreneurs.
Well, let me stop you because you may have missed the earlier conversation when Carlos and Linda were both speaking about doing this in small bites, and certainly, and Linda, you may want to, you know, to piggyback on that.
Well, there has to be some type of regulation and control, and it's up to the city, the mayor, and the council to work, you know, with their agencies to decide how many they are going to open up at one time. I can't comment on behalf of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't comment on the intentions. And once again, when you do a proposed legislation, it's always amended. What she has put out, and any time she or a council member puts out any type of proposed legislation, it's always amended. There are always changes. So I would advise you to voice your opinions to the council members when these hearings go down and testify at the hearings.
Because
that's
it sounds
the process.
Like she's, putting the cart before the horse also, because you can't talk about fair shots and opportunities for African Americans until the opportunities become available. Now, certainly it would be great if all of the foundations of that were to be in place so that, let us say for the sake of argument, that 18 months from now this happens and we can hit the ground running. But I would argue that this is so new.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so controversial, and we've got all of these moving parts, including the federal government moving parts, as far as what Carlos was sharing with us, that that taking a big bite may mean that you do choke.
Yeah.
So,
and we've seen some states roll out their recreational programs and just fell flat.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time.
Yeah.
And it takes time to, even before you can do that, it takes time for the product to grow, to be processed, to be lab tested, to be packaged. You know, it's a very laborious process. Mm-hmm. And you can't, anybody that's ordering any or getting any from other places is breaking the law. Because mm-hmm. it's federally illegal to cross state lines via mail, car, train, plane, any kind of way.
Drone,
walking across state lines with the product, because it's a federal one. It's a federal one substance.
Scott, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I want to ask Linda, so what happens behind the walls? What goes on inside? We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
We'll talk to you in a bit. Stay with us. Come back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the medical marijuana business here in the District of Columbia. So, Linda.
Yes.
If I have a medical marijuana prescription and I come to Anacostia Organics, what happens?
So
When I get to the door, what happens?
I'm going to walk you before you get to that door.
Okay, good.
Okay. So you will have a medical marijuana card. You have to have the referral from a doctor that is registered with the Department of Health, an APRN, a homeopathic, or a dentist in D.C. Those are the ones that can refer you.
Hmm.
So you get the referral from your doctor, and you can bring it to us at Anacostia Organics, 2022 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue in historic Anacostia. And we can actually upload that referral with your application with you and take your photo shot and, you know, your payment and submit that to the Department of Health, or you can submit it all online yourself.
Okay.
Yeah. So once you get that card, now that they are doing everything online at the Department of Health, to include the payments, you normally get your medical marijuana card in 5 to 7, 8 days. The process is much, shortened, than it has been. But once you get that card, you take it to a medical marijuana dispensary in D.C. that is licensed, and they list the licensed ones on their website, because there are brick-and-mortar places saying that they are medical marijuana dispensaries in D.C. that are illegal. They are not licensed.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to one of the licensed dispensaries, say Anacostia Organics. You ring the doorbell. The security will ask for you to show you your card through the window. Then he buzzes you in, he, she buzzes you in, and then we have a security checkpoint there where your card is checked and your ID is checked by security, and it goes into the national system. And once we see that you have not used your 4-ounce allotment
For legal purposes.
Okay. Oh, you know, if you have, mm-hmm. if you've used your 4-ounce allotment for that month, you cannot enter the dispensary. But if you have it, then he buzzes you in to the dispensary. My concierge and patient care specialists are standing there waiting for you. They take you through another check with your card, and then they find out what you're looking for, if you've ever used any type of cannabis, what your symptoms are, and walk you through the process and tell you your options.
So what are those options? Is it smokable? Is it edible? Is it oil? Is it what?
You know, there are so many. It's not like it used to be in the 60s where the only thing you could do was smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So now there are very many ways to get the benefits of the cannabis. So we do have the flower, which is smokable.
Okay.
We do have the tinctures, the balms, the salves, the lotions, the we have suppositories, we have, edibles, mints, chocolates, you know, all types of forms of cannabis.
So where do these things come from? I'm assuming mm-hmm. you don't, you know, make the suppositories and the edibles.
No, we don't do any of that.
There.
Yeah, so in D.C., we have to buy from, and in every state, that's, you're doing it legally, you have to buy from one of the licensed cultivators. So we have 8 licensed cultivators in the District of Columbia. And so they cultivate, they manufacture, they process, they do it all right there.
That's amazing.
In their facilities. And then we buy from them. We place orders every week. And they give us the new strands that come out every week, or the new products that come out every week, so we can, you know, also order those.
It from what you're telling me, first of all, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it take from beginning to end? Let's say if somebody was getting flowers or some other kind of product, if they've been before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How long does it take them from beginning to end, to from the door to leaving with their product, approximately?
It varies. We have a lot of patients who are very knowledgeable. And, you know, like I said, we just opened our doors of Anacostia Organics in February. So there have been dispensaries open since 2013 in the District of Columbia. And so many of them know the product that they want. And many of them, you could go on Weed Maps. All of us are on Weed Maps. And so Weed Maps is a source that you could go in and Google, you know, dispensaries in Washington, D.C., dispensaries in Chicago, in Colorado. And it gives you the list of dispensaries, but also it gives you the products that they carry and the prices of the products.
You are a woman of a certain age.
Yeah.
You remember when marijuana was just plain, simple, illegal, and all of the social devastation that often came with it, black men, black women being locked up, families broken and the like. When 6 years ago, when you decided, when you were sitting around having mimosas with your girlfriends.
How'd you know that?
It was a guess. did you have any reservations about this kind of business, or did you say, well, if it's going to be legal, it doesn't matter anymore?
I had no reservations whatsoever because I knew too many people personally that had benefited from medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, I even, back in the day, since you said I'm a woman of a certain age, this plant has been around since the beginning of time. And, you know, I'm half Native American, so Native Americans have been using it. It's been, you know, all over Africa, almost everywhere in the United States.
Have you talked to your pastor about it?
I am talking to so I want to let you know that I had Catholic priests write letters of recommendation for my application.
Mm-hmm.
I am talking to ministers in my community to see about presenting to them about the medicinal benefits of marijuana. Everybody's using it. You know, most of my patients are seniors.
Yeah.
But we also have children. And we have people who are quadriplegic. We have, you know, all types of, and when you see them coming back and saying, I feel great, I'm not having the symptom, it's not as severe, my pain, resuming my life, I'm able to do things, I'm able to enjoy my kids, my grandkids, that, you know, it warms your heart.
And not everybody who uses these products, a lot of people are assuming that you get high. That's not always the case.
No, everybody's body reacts differently. And it depends upon what you're using and how you're using it. That's why it's very important to go to a doctor that knows about the plant and knows what form to recommend you to take for your symptoms and the proper dosages.
And real quick, and you mentioned this during the break, and I think we need to put a fine point on this. Dispensaries, facilities are not the only business opportunities related to this business.
That's absolutely right. That, you know, I've been doing a lot of speaking, and I've been encouraging everyone, and particularly those of color, to take whatever your professional skills are or whatever your skills are and transfer it to this business. That goes from lighting, electrical, interior design, security, anything that touches any other business, cleaning, is in this business. And we're not there. And so we have to buy from people that don't look like us to those services.
Well, I'm quite sure that you will continue to sing the praises of this great business opportunity. And again, you know, congratulations. And I'm sure we're going to be hearing much, much more from you as these bills and the federal government tries to catch up with the rest of the community. Linda Mercado Green, thank you so much.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Mm-hmm. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.